Yeah, my name is Urs Schultes. I have worked together on this project with Doug Wies from Precision Chrome Management, Rick Lawrence, Clayton Jones, and Neil Christensen. And the company I currently work for is called RapidEye. It will launch 5 satellites next year. They should be operational by next summer. And the satellites will have 5 bands, and what's special about it is basically we'll have a band in the red edge region. And since one of the main markets for the company, we think, will be the agricultural market, so we won't be able to detect the nitrogen status of the plants better, and that's why the satellites will have a red edge band. Pixel size will be 5 meters, and I will show you an example like on a revisit frequency. This sort of just give you a quick idea of like what the system will look like. The satellites will be all in the same orbit, equally placed around the globe. And here we have an example that's actually seen sort of from the sun. You would have like a satellite, one just over the North Pole, the other one over Florida, and then the third one over the South Pacific. And as the Earth turns away under the satellites, basically you have to imagine like the satellites are always in the same orbit and the Earth turns away under the satellites. So a few minutes later, the Earth will have turned and like satellite one, the one that before was over the North Pole is now down here, almost close to the South Pole. And we have like one satellite over New Orleans. I'm going to show you also an example like on how coverage will work. We have here Montana. So on day one, you would have almost three passes would go over Montana. Then the next day, you would have 3 more passes. And then again, 3 more passes. So theoretically, it would take around 5 days to cover Montana. Obviously, there are issues with cloud cover and all that, so we think we can deliver an image every 2 to 3 weeks. Just for your information, I will show you some results from experiment that we conducted here north of Great Falls in the Fairfield Bench area, so that you have an idea of where the experiments were done. This is another graph, sort of a notional figure of like what the system will look like. Here is the red edge band, and as you know, this is the red edge position is very sensitive to the chlorophyll status of the plant. And then the question is, like, you know, a lot of work that's been done and published is based on narrow band indices, and the big question is or was, can we work actually with broad range red edge band as well. And I will show you some results that I got this slide from Jan Eitel. He has published a paper on using the exactly the same bands as the RapidEye satellites will have. And here is the result he got from just using NDVI. This was based on a dry land wheat field in Oregon. He just looked at the spatial variability, the natural variability within a field. He didn't put in any special nitrogen treatments, and these basically differences were like due to areas that were like drier, where you had like lower leaf area, but you like if you have like drought stress or dry conditions, you may still the nitrogen supply might still be sufficient, but just the leaf growth is reduced. So therefore, with an NDVI, you get like low NDVI values, but you can still have like high SPAD values. Jan then came up with the idea of dividing MCARI by MTVI2, and basically what I have to say, this is like broadband indices, like the same as what RapidEye will have. And MCARI is quite sensitive to chlorophyll content, while MTVI2 is sensitive to ground cover. So if you divide chlorophyll content by ground cover, you can get really good results. What you need for this, you need the green, red, red edge and NIR band, and we didn't have that one, those bands available for the campaign we ran this summer. We took some measurements in Montana with a crop scan radiometer, and because we also had a campaign going on with an aircraft with a free band, a red, red edge and an NIR band, so we had to come up with a new index. And this again on the left side we have NDVI, and on the right side is another new index, basically where we look at the difference between NIR and red edge reflectance divided by NIR minus WDVI. I'm sorry, divided by NIR minus red edge divided by WDVI. That's what you see on the right side here. And we got pretty good results. What we have found during the summer that this index is very sensitive to accurate calibration to reflectance. It works really well with a crop scan. If you use aircraft data, you have to pay really close attention that you do the calibration right, and which index we will use for operations with RapidEye, we haven't decided that yet. We will have to do some sensitivity analysis. So now basically we have established that we can detect nitrogen status, but then the other question is how can we put it to use so that farmers actually can make use of it and manage their crops better. To do that, because I also as mentioned before, we can, the revisiting frequency or the image, the time between two usable images will be about 2 to 3 weeks. So we basically need a system that tells the grower in advance that the nitrogen deficiency might come up. And probably there has been quite a bit of work done in Oklahoma and also in other regions, like using these so-called nitrogen ramps. That's where you put in like a low rate and then you have an average rate, and you may even decide to go above the normal rate. Also, what we have found, it's really one should go basically to the extremes and reduce the low rates probably even more than what I showed on this slide here. And we used this approach, this nitrogen ramp approach for a study we did in the Greater Fairfield Bench. We worked on around 30 production fields, winter wheat, spring wheat, and malting barley. And we had put in nitrogen ramps on around half to two-thirds of the fields. And simultaneously with the image acquisition, we took some tissues, leaf tissue samples for winter wheat in June 17 and 10 days later for spring wheat. And then also we took some measurements with the Duncan tech, basically to, we used the Duncan tech for the image acquisition. The camera was mounted on an aircraft. And then all the imagery got georeferenced and calibrated to reflectance. What happened this year was really very dry in Montana. The crops usually get planted in the second half of April and harvested in the first half of August. And during that time, they got only 124 millimeters of rain. It's around maybe about half to two-thirds of the normal rainfall that they can expect. So therefore, as you can imagine, also the nitrogen demand was really reduced. And here are the results from the tissue samples. So it's sort of a rule of thumb that if the leaf tissue nitrogen content is above 3.5 to 4%, the crop is in the sufficient range. And basically, there was no deficiency, no real nitrogen deficiency found on any of the samples, although we actually had put in those NRAMs with quite low nitrogen levels. And this is just an example. On the left side, we have a ground cover map. Ground cover is basically that would show if there was a deficiency, because leaf growth in cereals is very sensitive to nitrogen stress. Leaf size is reduced and also the number of tillers. So if there was nitrogen stress, you should probably would pick that up with a ground cover map, or you would pick up the result of a nitrogen stress with a ground cover map. And there was, you couldn't see any of those. What you see here are these four areas in which a different nitrogen rates were applied. This is basically at the end, you know, we have this idea as applied map and then calculated how much nitrogen was actually distributed on each of these four plots. And yeah, as you can see, there was no difference in ground cover, and also tissue nitrogen content was not affected by these different N rates. What we see here is just some spatial variability within the field, and most of that is probably due to spatial variability of moisture availability, of moisture limitations. And this is an example of what we can do, like for the farmer, what we can generate. Basically, we can get an overview of all the fields on ground cover. So farmer sees if there is a problem with fields, or which fields are doing really well, and then the same for nitrogen. And the nice thing about that is that basically with time we can build a multi-temporal record. So next year the grower can go back and look what was my crop like by the end of June, what was the nitrogen status. He will know 2007 was a dry year, and he can compare the current conditions of the crop to the previous years. Thank you.
Questions and comments for Dr. Schultes?
Yeah. Why did you focus on nitrogen rating? You showed that the error index or the amount of nitrogen within the crop was sensitive to nitrogen content. So why did you focus here on nitrogen concentration?
That's basically what that's the standard they work with. They take leaf tissue sample, have them analyzed for nitrogen content, and that's sort of standard measurement what they do. They spare meter isn't used that often, so tissue sampling is done more often. So we try to do same as local practice.
How are data from this made available?
How soon? Well, launch is in the first half of next year, and then it takes about 1 to 3 months to get the whole system in place, calibrate the sensor, test the ground segment, and so by next summer, first imagery will be available. We can't give you the exact date at this point.
So you
could
order it?
It sort of depends. RapidEye focuses mainly on providing services to customers, but for research purposes. So there's a limitation, like not everybody can order an image every 2 weeks. There will be some constraints, but for research, obviously it's different. So researchers can get imagery more frequently than commercial applications.
Sorry. How long between the time of getting the image and delivering it to the farmer?
The goal is to get that done in within 48 hours. So that, I mean, the processing will be all automated. We will have automatic calibration to reflectance. So it should go really quickly.
What cost?
Depends. I can't give you exact prices. Depends like on the area that you buy and all that. Sort of, I mean, roughly what we say is sort of €1 per square kilometer for large areas. So that's sort of rough idea, but it can be more or less. So just sort of you have some idea.
Do you have a question?
Does that sound like, does it
want to
be a pointable satellite, or is it always going to be major looking?
No, it can be pointable up to 20 degrees left and right. So it's
But
we can actually, on each orbit, it can capture about 1,500 kilometers. So we don't cover everything. That's unlike Landsat. There's some limitation, but one looks at the agricultural areas, how they're distributed around the world, it's most of them are not longer than 1,500 kilometers. And that also then basically the fact that we can point it, we can overcome limitations, like if there was cloud cover in an area, we can try the next day to cover that area again by pointing satellite, although there might be then some problems.
It looks like the overpass frequency over any point looks like it's going to be about 6 days?
Yeah, sort of in around at 40 degrees north, it will be around 6 days, yeah. The rockets will be Russian rockets. They're former intercontinental missiles. They're being converted to for good civil use. So.
Well, thank you, Dr. Forbes.